Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Chapter 9 of Freckles. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Melissa. Freckles, by Jean Stratton Porter. Chapter 9. Wherein the Limberlost falls upon Mrs. Duncan, and Freckles comes to the rescue. Freckles was halfway to the Limberlost when he dismounted. He could ride no further, because he could not see the road. He sat under a tree, and leaning against it, sobbed, shook, twisted, and rent him. If they would remind him of his position, speak condescendingly, or notice his hand, he could endure it. But this, it would surely kill him. His hot, pulsing Irish blood was stirred deeply. What did they mean? Why did they do it? Were they like that to everyone? Was it pity? It could not be, for he knew that the bird woman and the angel's father must know that he was not really McLean's son, and it did not matter to them in the least. In spite of accident and poverty, they evidently expected him to do something worthwhile in the world. That must be his remedy. He must work on his education. He must get away. He must find and do the great thing of which Angel talked. For the first time, his thoughts turned anxiously toward the city in the beginning of his studies. McLean and the Duncan spoke of him as the boy, but he was a man. He must face life bravely and act a man's part. The Angel was a mere child. He must not allow her to torture him past endurance with her frank comradeship that meant to him high heaven, earth's richness, and all that lay between, and nothing to her. There was an ominous growl of thunder, and amazed at himself, Freckles snatched up his wheel and raced toward the swamp. He was worried to find his boots laying at the cabin door. The children playing on the woodpile told him that Mither said they were so heavy she couldn't walk in them, and she had come back and taken them off. Thoroughly frightened, he stopped only long enough to slip them on, and then sped with all his strength for the Limberlost. To the west, the long, black, hard-beaten trail lay clear, but far up the east side, straight across the path, he could see what was certainly a limp, brown figure. Freckles spun with all his might. Face down, Sarah Duncan lay across the trail. When Freckles turned her over, his blood chilled as the look of horror settled on her face. There was a low humming, and something spatted against him. Glancing around, Freckles shivered in terror, for there was a swarm of wild bees settled on a scrub thorn only a few yards away. The air was filled with excited, unsettled bees making ready to lead farther in search of a suitable location. Then he thought he understood, and with a prayer of thankfulness in his heart that she had escaped, even so narrowly, he caught her up and hurried down the trail until they were well out of danger. He laid her in the shade, and carrying water from the swamp in the crown of his hat, he bathed her face and hands, but she lay in unbroken stillness without a sign of life. She had found Freckles' boots so large and heavy that she had gone back and taken them off, although she was mortally afraid to approach the swamp without them. The thought of it made her nervous, and the fact that she had never been there alone added to her fears. She had not followed the trail many yards when her trouble began. She was not Freckles, so not a bird of the line was going to be fooled into thinking she was. They began jumping from their nests and darting from unexpected places around her head and feet with quick whirs that set her starting and dodging. Before Freckles was halfway to the town, poor Mrs. Duncan was hysterical, and the Limberlost had neither sung nor performed for her. But there was trouble brewing. It was quiet and intensely hot, with that stifling stillness that precedes a summer storm, and feathers and fur were tense and nervous. The birds were singing only a few broken snatches and flying around, seeking places of shelter. One moment everything seemed devoid of life, the next there was an unexpected whirr, buzz, and sharp cry. Inside, a pandemonium of growling, spatting, snarling, and grunting broke loose. The swale bent flat before heavy gusts of wind, and the big black chicken swept lower and lower above the swamp. Patches of clouds gathered, shutting out the sun and making it very dark, and the next moment were swept away. The sun poured with fierce, burning brightness, and everything was quiet. It was at the first growl of thunder that Freckles really had noticed the weather, and putting his own troubles aside resolutely, raced for the swamp. Sarah Duncan paused on the line. "Weel, I wouldna stay in this place for 1,000,000 a month," she said aloud, and the sound of her voice brought no comfort, for it was so little like she had thought it that she glanced hastily around her to see if it had really been she that spoke. She tremblingly wiped the perspiration from her face with the skirt of her sunbonnet. "Awful hot," she panted huskily. "Believe there's going to be a big storm. I do hope Freckles will hurry." Her chin was quivering as a terrified child's. She lifted her bonnet to replace it and brushed against a bush beside her. Whirr! Almost into her face, when a nighthawk stretched along a limb for its daytime nap. Mrs. Duncan cried out and sprang down the trail, alighting on a frog that was hopping across. The terrible croak it gave as she crushed it sickened her. She screamed wildly and jumped to one side. That carried her into the swale, where the grasses reached almost to her waist, and her horror of snakes returning, she made a flying leap for an old log lying beside the line. She alighted squarely, but it was so damp and rotten that she sank straight through it to her knees. She caught at the wire as she went down, and missing, raked her wrist across a barb until she tore a bleeding gash. Her fingers closed convulsively around the second strand. She was too frightened to scream now. Her tongue stiffened. She clung frantically to the sagging wire and finally managed to grasp it with the other hand. Then she could reach the top wire, and so she drew herself up and found solid footing. She picked up the club that she had dropped in order to extricate herself. Leaning heavily on it, she managed to return to the trail, but she was trembling so that she scarcely could walk. Going a few steps further, she came to the stump of the first tree that had been taken out. She sat bolt upright and very still, trying to collect her thoughts and reason away her terror. A squirrel above her dropped a nut, and as it came rattling down, bouncing from branch to branch, every nerve in her tugged wildly. When the disgusted squirrel barked loudly, she sprang to the trail. The wind arose higher, the changes from light to darkness were more abrupt, while the thunder came closer and louder at every peal. In swarms, the blackbirds arose from the swale and came flocking to the interior, with a clamoring cry, "T'check! T'check!" Grackles marshaled to the tribal call, "Trallahee! Trallahee!" Red-winged blackbirds swept low, calling to belated mates, "Follow me! Follow me!" Big jetty crows gathered close to her, crying as if to warn her to flee before it was everlastingly too late. A heron, fishing the nearby pool for Freckles' find-out frog, fell into trouble with a muskrat and uttered a rasping note that sent Mrs. Duncan a rod down the line without realizing that she had moved. She was too shaken to run far. She stopped and looked around her fearfully. Several bees struck her and were angrily buzzing before she noticed them. Then the humming swelled on all sides. A convulsive sob shook her, and she ran into the bushes, now into the swale, anywhere to avoid the swarming bees, ducking, dodging, fighting for her very life. Presently the humming seemed to become a little fainter. She found the trail again, and ran with all her might from a few of her angry pursuers. As she ran, straining every muscle, she suddenly became aware that, crossing the trail before her, was a big, round, black body with brown markings on its back, like painted geometrical patterns. She tried to stop. The louder buzzing behind warned her she dared not. Gathering her skirts higher, with hair flying around her face and her eyes almost bursting from their sockets, she ran straight toward it. The sound of her feet and the humming of the bees alarmed the rattler, so it stopped across the trail, lifting its head above the grasses of the swale and rattling inquiringly, rattled until the bees were outdone. Straight toward it went the panic-stricken woman, running wildly and uncontrollably. She took one leap, clearing its body on the path, then flew ahead with winged feet. The snake, coiled to strike, missed Mrs. Duncan and landed among the bees instead. They settled over and around it, and realizing that it had found trouble, it sank among the grasses and went thrashing towards its den in the deep willow-fringed low ground. The swale appeared as if a reaper were cutting a wide swath. The mass of enraged bees darted angrily around, searching for it, and striking the scrub thorn began a temporary settling there to discover whether it were a suitable place. Completely exhausted, Mrs. Duncan staggered on a few steps farther, fell facing the path where Freckles found her, and lay quietly. Freckles worked over her until she drew a long, quivering breath and opened her eyes. When she saw him bending over her, she closed them tightly and, gripping him, struggled to her feet. He helped her, and with his arm around and half carrying her, they made their way to the clearing. She clung to him with all her remaining strength, but open her eyes she would not until her children came clustering around her. Then, brawny, big Scotswoman though she was, she quietly keeled over again. The children added their wailing to Freckles' panic. This time he was so close to the cabin that he could carry her into the house and lay her on the bed. He sent the eldest boy scudding down the corduroy to the nearest neighbor, and between them they undressed Mrs. Duncan and discovered that she was not bitten. They bathed and bound the bleeding wrist and coaxed her back to consciousness. She lay sobbing and shuddering. The first intelligent word she said was, "Freckles, look at that jar on the kitchen table, and see if my yeast is no running o'er." Several days passed before she could give Duncan and Freckles any detailed account of what had happened to her. Even then she could not do it without crying as the least of her babies. Freckles was almost heartbroken, and nursed her as well as any woman could have done, while big Duncan, with a heart full for them both, worked early and late to chink every crack of the cabin and examine every spot that possibly could harbor a snake. The effects of her morning on the trail kept her shivering half the time. She could not rest until she sent for McLean and begged him to save Freckles from further risk in that place of horrors. The boss went to the swamp with his mind fully determined to do so. Freckles stood and laughed at him. "Why, Mr. McLean, don't you let a woman's nervous system set you worrying about me," he said. "I'm not denying how she felt, because I've been through it myself, but that's all over and gone. It's the height of me glory to fight it out with the old swamp, and all that's in it, or will be coming to it, and then to turn it over to you, as I promised you and meself I'd do, sir. You couldn't break the heart of me entire quicker than to be taking it from me now, when I'm just on the home stretch. It won't be over 3 or 4 weeks yet, and that when I've got it almost a year, why, what's that to me, sir? You mustn't let a woman get mixed up with business, for I've always heard about how that's bringing trouble." McLean smiled. "What about that last tree?" he said. Freckles blushed and grinned appreciatively. "Angels and bird women don't count in the common run, sir," he affirmed shamelessly. McLean sat in the saddle and laughed. End of chapter 9.
Chapter 10 of Freckles. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Freckles by Jean Stratton Porter. Chapter 10, wherein Freckles strives mightily and the swamp angel rewards him. The bird woman and the angel did not seem to count in the common run, for they arrived on time for the third of the series and found McLean on the line talking to Freckles. The boss was filled with enthusiasm over a Marsh article of the bird woman's that he had just read. He begged to be allowed to accompany her into the swamp and watch the method by which she secured an illustration in such a location. The bird woman explained to him that it was an easy matter with the subject she then had in hand, and as Little Chicken was too small to be frightened by him, and big enough to be growing troublesome, she was glad for his company. They went to the chicken log together, leaving to the happy Freckles the care of the angel, who had brought her banjo and a roll of songs that she wanted to hear him sing. The bird woman told them that they might practice in Freckles' room until she finished with Little Chicken, and then she and McLean would come to the concert. It was almost 3 hours before they finished and came down the west trail for their rest and lunch. McLean walked ahead, keeping sharp watch on the trail and clearing it of fallen limbs from overhanging trees. He sent a big piece of bark flying into the swale and then stopped short and stared at the trail. The bird woman bent forward. Together they studied that imprint of the angel's foot. At last their eyes met, the bird woman's filled with astonishment and McLean's humid with pity. Neither said a word, but they knew. McLean entered the swale and hunted up the bark. He replaced it, and the bird woman carefully stepped over. As they reached the bushes at the entrance, the voice of the angel stopped them, for it was commanding and filled with much impatience. "Freckles James Ross McLean," she was saying, "you fill me with dark blue despair. You're singing as if your voice were glass and might break at any minute. Why don't you sing as you did a week ago? Answer me that, please." Freckles smiled confusedly at the angel, who sat on one of his fancy seats, playing his accompaniment on her banjo. "You are a fraud," she said. "Here you went last week and led me to think that there was the making of a great singer in you. And now you are singing—do you know how badly you are singing?" "Yes," said Freckles meekly. "I am thinking I'm too happy to be singing well today. The music don't come right only when I'm lonesome and sad. The world's for being all sunshine at present, for among you and Mr. McLean and the Bird Woman, I'm after being that happy that I can't keep me thoughts on me notes. It's more than sorry I am to be disappointing you. Play it over, and I'll be beginning again, and this time I'll hold hard." "Well," said the angel disgustedly, "it seems to me that if I had all the things to be proud of that you have, I'd lift up my head and sing." "And what is it I've to be proud of, ma'am?" politely inquired Freckles. "Why, a whole world full of things!" cried the angel explosively. "For one thing, you can be good and proud over the way you've kept the timber thieves out of this lease, and the trust your father has in you. You can be proud that you've never even once disappointed him or failed in what he believed you could do. You can be proud over the way everyone speaks of you with trust and honor, and about how brave of heart and strong of body you are. I heard a big man say a few days ago that the Limberlost was full of disagreeable things, positive dangers, unhealthful as it could be, and that since the memory of the first settlers it has been a rendezvous for runaways, thieves, and murderers. This swamp is named for a man that was lost here and wandered around till he starved. That man I was talking with said he wouldn't take your job for $1,000 a month. In fact, he said he wouldn't have it for any money. And you've never missed a day or lost a tree. Proud? Why, I should think you would parade around all proper over that. And you can always be proud that you were born an Irishman. My father is Irish, and if you want to see him get up and strut, give him a teeny opening to enlarge on his race. He says that if the Irish had decent territory, they'd lead the world. He says they've always been handicapped by lack of space and a fertile soil. He says if Ireland had been as big and fertile as Indiana, why, England wouldn't ever have had the upper hand. She'd only be an appendage. Fancy England, an appendage. He says Ireland has the finest orators and the keenest statesmen in Europe today. And when England wants a fight, with whom does she fill her trenches? Irishmen, of course. Ireland has the greenest grass and trees, the finest stones and lakes, and they've jaunting cars. I don't know just exactly what they are, but Ireland has all there are, anyway. They've a great lot of actors and a few singers, and there never was a sweeter poet than one of theirs. You should hear my father recite, "Dear Harp of My Country." He does it this way. The angel arose, made an elaborate old-time bow, and holding up the banjo, recited in clipping feet and meter, with rhythmic swing and a touch of brogue that was simply irresistible. "Dear Harp of My Country," the angel ardently clasped the banjo. "In darkness I found thee." She held it to the light. The cold chain of silence had hung o'er thee long. She muted the strings with her rosy palm. "Then proudly, my own Irish harp, I unbound thee." She threw up her head and swept a ringing harmony. "And gave all thy chords to light, freedom, and song." She crashed into the notes of the accompaniment she had been playing for Freckles. "That's what you want to be thinking of," she cried. "Not darkness and lonesomeness and sadness, but light, freedom, and song. I can't begin to think offhand of all the big, splendid things an Irishman has to be proud of. But whatever they are all yours, and you are a part of them. I just despise that saddest when I sing business. You can sing. Now you go over there and do it. Ireland has had her statesmen, warriors, actors, and poets. Now you be her voice. You stand right out there before the cathedral door, and I'm going to come down the aisle playing that accompaniment, and when I stop in front of you, you sing." The angel's face wore an unusual flush. Her eyes were flashing, and she was palpitating with earnestness. She parted the bushes and disappeared. Freckles, straight and tense, stood waiting. Presently, before he saw she was there, she was coming down the aisle toward him, playing compellingly, and rifts of light were touching her with golden glory. Freckles stood as if transfixed. The cathedral was majestically beautiful, from arched dome of frescoed gold, green, and blue, in never-ending shades and harmonies, to the mosaic aisle she trod, richly inlaid in choicest colors, and gigantic pillars that were God's handiwork, fashioned and perfected through ages of sunshine and rain. But the fair young face and divinely molded form of the angel were his most perfect work of all. Never had she appeared so surpassingly beautiful. She was smiling encouragingly now. and as she came toward him, she struck the chords full and strong. The heart of poor Freckles almost burst with dull pain, and his great love for her. In his desire to fulfill her expectations, he forgot everything else, and when she reached his initial chord, he was ready. He literally burst forth, three little leaves of Irish green, united in one stem. Love, truth, and valor do they mean. They form a magic gem. The angel's eyes widened curiously, and her lips parted. A deep color swept into her cheeks. She had intended to arouse him. She had more than succeeded. She was too young to know that in the effort to rouse a man, women frequently kindle fires that they neither can quench nor control. Freckles was looking over her head now and singing that song as it never had been sung before, for her alone, and instead of her helping him as she had intended, he was carrying her with him on the waves of his voice, away, away into another world. When he struck into the chorus, wide-eyed and panting, she was swaying toward him and playing with all her might. Oh, do you love? Oh, say you love. You love the shamrock green. At the last note, Freckles' voice ceased, and he looked at the angel. He had given his best and his all. He fell on his knees and folded his arms across his breast. The angel, as if magnetized, walked straight down the aisle to him, and running her fingers into the crisp masses of his red hair, tilted his head back and laid her lips on his forehead. Then she stepped back and faced him. "Good boy," she said in a voice that wavered from the throbbing of her shaken heart. "Dear boy, I knew you could do it. I knew it was in you. Freckles, when you go into the world, if you can face a big audience and sing like that, just once, you will be immortal, and anything you want will be yours." "Anything?" gasped Freckles. "Anything," said the angel. Freckles rose, muttered something, and catching up his old bucket, plunged into the swamp blindly, on a pretense of bringing water. The angel walked slowly across the study, sat on the rustic bench, and, through narrowed lids, intently studied the tip of her shoe. On the trail, the Bird Woman wheeled to McLean with a dumbfounded look. "God," he muttered. At last the Bird Woman spoke. "Do you think the angel knew she did that?" she asked softly. "No," said McLean, "I do not. But the poor boy knew it. Heaven help him." The Bird Woman stared across the gentle waving swale. "I don't see how I am going to blame her," she said at last. "It's so exactly what I would have done myself." "Say the remainder," demanded McLean hoarsely. "Do him justice." "He was born a gentleman," conceded the Bird Woman. "He took no advantage. He never even offered to touch her. Whatever that kiss meant to him, he recognized it was the loving impulse of a child under stress of strong emotion. He was fine and manly as any man ever could have been." McLean lifted his hat. "Thank you," he said simply, and parted the bushes for her to enter Freckles' room. It was her first visit. Before she left, she sent for her cameras and made studies of each side of it and of the cathedral. She was entranced with the delicate beauty of the place, while her eyes kept following Freckles as if she could not believe that it could be his conception and work. That was a happy day. The Bird Woman had brought a lunch, and they spread it, with Freckles' dinner, on the study floor, and sat, resting and enjoying themselves. But the angel put her banjo into its case, silently gathered her music, and no one mentioned the concert. The Bird Woman left McLean and the angel to clear away the lunch, and with Freckles examined the walls of his room and told him all she knew about his shrubs and flowers. She analyzed a cardinal flower and showed him what he had wanted to know all summer, why the bees buzzed ineffectually around it, while the hummingbirds found it in an ever-ready feast. Some of his specimens were so rare that she was unfamiliar with them, and with the flower book between them they knelt, studying the different varieties. She wandered the length of the cathedral aisle with him, and it was at her suggestion that he lighted his altar with a row of flaming foxfire. As Freckles came to the cabin from his long day at the swamp, he saw Mrs. Chicken sweeping to the south, and wondered where she was going. He stepped into the bright, cozy little kitchen, and as he reached down the wash basin, he asked Mrs. Duncan a question. "Mother Duncan, do kisses wash off?" So warm a wave swept her heart that a half-flush mantled her face. She straightened her shoulders and glanced at her hands tenderly. "Lord, nah, Freckles," she cried. "At least the ones you get from people you love dinna. They dinna stay on the outside. They strike in until they find the center of your heart and make their stopping place there, and nothing can take them from you. I doubt if even death. Nay, lad, you can rest assured kisses dinna wash off." Freckles set the basin down and muttered when he plunged his hot, tired face into the water, "I needn't be afraid of washing then, for that one struck in." End of chapter 10. Chapter 11 of Freckles. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Freckles by Jean Stratton Porter, Chapter 11, wherein the butterflies go on a spree and Freckles informs the Bird Woman. "I wish," said Freckles at breakfast one morning, "that I had some way to be sending a message to the Bird Woman. I've something at the swamp that I'm believing never happened before, and surely she'll be wanting it."
"What now, Freckles?" asked Mrs. Duncan.
"Why, the oddest thing you ever heard of," said Freckles. "The whole insect tribe gone on a spree. I'm supposing it's my doings, but it all happened by accident, like. You see, on the swale side of the line, right against me trail, there's one of these scrub wild crab trees. Where the grass grows thick around it is the finest place you ever conceived of for snakes. Having women about has set me trying to clear out those fellows a bit, and yesterday I noticed that tree in passing. It struck me that it would be a good idea to be taking it out. First I thought I'd take me hatchet and cut it down, for it ain't thicker than my upper arm. Then I remembered how it was blooming in the spring and filling all the air with sweetness. The coloring of the blossoms is beautiful, and I hated to be killing it. I just cut the grass short all around it. Then I started at the ground, trimmed up the trunk near the height of me shoulder, and left the top spreading. That made it look so truly ornamental that, idle-like, I chips off the rough places neat, and this morning, on my soul, it's a sight. You see, cutting off the limbs and trimming up the trunk sets the sap running. In this hot sun it ferments in a few hours. There isn't much room for more things to crowd on that tree than there are, and to get drunker isn't nowadays possible."
"Well, I'll be dawned on," exclaimed Mrs. Duncan. "What kind of things do you mean, Freckles?"
"Why, just an army of black ants. Some of them are sucking away like old topers. Some of them are setting up on their tails and hind legs, fiddling with their forefeet and wiping their eyes. Some are rolling on the ground contented. There are quantities of big blue bottle flies all over the bark and hanging on the grasses around, too drunk to steer a course flying, so they just buzz away like flying, and all the time sitting still. The snake feeders are too full to feed anything, even more sap to themselves. There's a lot of hard-backed bugs, beetles, I guess, colored like the brown, blue, and black of a peacock's tail. They hang on until their legs of them are so wake they can't stick a minute longer. And then they break away and fall to the ground. They just lay there on their backs, fably clawing air. When it wears a bit, up they get and go crawling back for more. And they so full they bump into each other and roll over. Sometimes they can't climb the tree until they wait to sober up a little. There's a lot of big black and gold bumblebees done for entire, stumbling over the bark and rolling on the ground. They just lay there on their backs, rockin' from side to side, singin' to themselves like fat, happy babies. The wild bees keep up a steady buzzing with the beating of their wings. The butterflies are the worst old topers of them all. They're just a circus. You never saw the like of the beauties. They come every color you could be naming, and every shape you could be thinking up. They drink and drink until, if I'm driving them away, they stagger as they fly and turn somersaults in the air. If I leave 'em alone, they cling to the grasses, shivering happy-like. And I'm blessed, Mother Duncan, if the best of them could be unlocking the front door with a lead pencil, even."
"I never heard of anything say surprising," said Mrs. Duncan.
"It's a rare sight to watch them, and no one ever made a picture of a thing like that before. I'm for thinkin'," said Freckles earnestly.
"Nah," said Mrs. Duncan, "you can be pretty sure they dinna. The Bird Woman must have word in some way. If ye walk the line, and I walk to town and tell her. If you think ye can wait until after supper, I am most sure ye can gang yourself, for Duncan is coming home, and he'd be glad to watch for ye. If he doesna come, and not any passes that I can send word with today, I really will gang early in the morning and tell her myself. Freckles took his lunch and went to the swamp. He walked and watched eagerly. He could find no trace of anything, yet he felt a tense nervousness, as if trouble might be brooding. He examined every section of the wire and kept watchful eyes on the grasses of the swale in an effort to discover if anyone had passed through them, but he could discover no trace of anything to justify his fears. He tilted his hat brim to shade his face and looked for his chickens. They were hanging almost beyond sight in the sky. "Gee," he said, "if I only had your sharp eyes and convenient location now, I wouldn't need be troubling so." He reached his room and cautiously scanned the entrance before he stepped in. Then he pushed the bushes apart with his right arm and entered, his left hand on the butt of his favorite revolver. Instantly, he knew that someone had been there. He stepped to the center of the room, closely scanning each wall and the floor. He could find no trace of a clue to confirm his belief, yet so intimate was he with the spirit of the place that he knew. How he knew he could not have told, yet he did know that someone had entered his room, sat on his benches, and walked over his floor. He was surest about the case. Nothing was disturbed, yet it seemed to Freckles that he could see where prying fingers had tried the lock. He stepped behind the case, carefully examining the ground all around it. Close beside the tree to which it was nailed, he found a deep, fresh footprint in the spongy soil, a long, narrow print that was never made by the foot of Wesner. His heart tugged in his breast as he mentally measured the print, but he did not linger, for now the feeling arose that he was being watched. It seemed to him that he could feel the eyes of some intruder at his back. He knew he was examining things too closely. If anyone were watching, he would not want him to know that he felt it. He took the most open way and carried water for his flowers and moss as usual. But he put himself in no position in which he was fully exposed, and his hand was close to his revolver constantly. Growing restive at last under the strain, he plunged boldly into the swamp and searched minutely all around his room. But he could not discover the least thing to give him further cause for alarm. He unlocked his case, took out his wheel, and for the remainder of the day he rode and watched as he never had before. Several times he locked the wheel and crossed the swamp on foot, zigzagging to cover all the space possible. Every rod he traveled, he used the caution that sprang from knowledge of danger and the direction from which it would probably come. Several times he thought of sending for McLean, but for his life he could not make up his mind to do it, and with nothing more tangible than one footprint to justify him. He waited until he was sure Duncan would be home, if he were coming for the night, before he went to supper. The first thing he saw as he crossed the swale was the big bays in the yard. There had been no one passing that day, and Duncan readily agreed to watch until Freckles rode to town. He told Duncan of the footprint, and urged him to guard closely. Duncan said that he may rest easy, and filling his pipe and taking a good revolver, the man went to the Limberlost. Freckles made himself clean and neat and raced to town, but it was night, and the stars were shining before he reached the home of the Bird Woman. From afar he could see that the house was ablaze with lights. The lawn and veranda were strung with fancy lanterns and alive with people. He thought his errand important, so to turn back never occurred to Freckles. This was all the time or opportunity he would have. He must see the Bird Woman, and see her at once. He leaned his wheel inside the fence and walked up at the broad front entrance. As he neared the steps, he saw that the place was swarming with young people, and the angel, with an excuse to a group that surrounded her, came hurrying to him. "Oh, Freckles!" she cried delightedly. "So you could come? We were so afraid you could not. I'm as glad as I can be." "I don't understand," said Freckles. "Were you expecting me?" "Why, of course!" exclaimed the angel. "Haven't you come to my party? Didn't you get my invitation? I sent you one." "By mail?" asked Freckles. "Yes," said the angel. "I had to help with the preparations, and I couldn't find time to drive out. But I wrote you a letter, and I told you that the Bird Woman was giving a party for me, and I wanted you to come, surely. I told them at the office to put it with Mr. Duncan's mail."
"Then that's likely where it is at present," said Freckles.
"Duncan comes to town only once a week, and at times not that. He's home tonight for the first in a week. He's watching an hour for me until I come to the Bird Woman with a bit of work I thought she'd be caring to hear about. Is she where I can see her?"
The angel's face clouded. "What a disappointment!" she cried. "I did so want all my friends to know you. Can't you stay anyway?"
Freckles glanced from his wading boots to the patent leathers of some of Angel's friends and smiled whimsically. But there was no danger of his ever misjudging her again.
"You know I cannot, Angel," he said.
"I am afraid I do," she said ruefully. "It's too bad. But there's a thing I want for you more than to come to my party, and that is to hang on and win with your work. I think of you every day, and I just pray that those thieves are not getting ahead of you. Oh, Freckles, do watch closely."
She was so lovely a picture as she stood before him, ardent in his cause, that Freckles could not take his eyes from her to notice what her friends were thinking. If she did not mind, why should he? Anyway, if they really were the angel's friends, probably they were better accustomed to her ways than he. Her face and bared neck and arms were like the wild rose bloom. Her soft frock of white tulle lifted and stirred around her with the gentle evening air. The beautiful golden hair that crept around her temples and ears as if it loved to cling there was caught back and bound with broad blue satin ribbon. There was a sash of blue at her waist, and knots of it catching up her draperies.
"Must I go after the Bird Woman?" she pleaded.
"Indeed you must," answered Freckles firmly.
The angel went away, but returned to say the Bird Woman was telling a story to those inside, and she could not come for a short time.
"You won't come in?" she pleaded.
"I must not," said Freckles. "I'm not dressed to be among your friends, and I might be forgetting myself and stay too long."
"Then," said the angel, "we mustn't go through the house, because it would disturb the story. But I want you to come outside way to the conservatory and have some of my birthday lunch and some cake to take to Mrs. Duncan and the babies. Won't that be fun?"
Freckles thought that it would be more than fun and followed delightedly. The angel gave him a big glass, brimming with some icy, sparkling liquid that struck his palate as it had never been touched before, because a combination of frosty fruit juices had not been a frequent beverage with him. The night was warm, and the angel most beautiful and kind. A triple delirium of spirit, mind, and body seized upon him and developed a boldness all unnatural. He slightly parted the heavy curtains that separated the conservatory from the company and looked between. He almost stopped breathing. He had read of things like that, but he never had seen them. The open space seemed to stretch through half a dozen rooms, all ablaze with lights, perfumed with flowers, and filled with elegantly dressed people. There were glimpses of polished floors, sparkling glass, and fine furnishings. From somewhere, the voice of his beloved Bird Woman arose and fell. The angel crowded beside him and was watching also.
"Doesn't it look pretty?" she whispered.
"Do you suppose heaven is any finer than that?" asked Freckles. The angel began to laugh.
"Do you want to be laughing harder than that?" queried Freckles.
"A laugh is always good," said the angel. "A little more avoirdupois won't hurt me. Go ahead."
"Well, then," said Freckles, "it's only that I feel all over as if I belonged here. I could wear fine clothes and move over those floors and hold me own against the best of them."
"But where does my laugh come in?" demanded the angel, as if she had been defrauded.
"And you ask me where the laugh comes in, looking me in the face after that," marveled Freckles.
"I wouldn't be so foolish as to laugh at such a manifest truth as that," said the angel. "Anyone who knows you even half as well as I do knows that you are never guilty of a discourtesy, and you move with twice the grace of any man here. Why shouldn't you feel as if you belonged where people are graceful and courteous?"
"On my soul," said Freckles, "you are kind to be thinking it. You are doubly kind to be saying it."
The curtains parted and a woman came toward them. Her silks and laces trailed across the polished floors. The lights gleamed on her neck and arms and flashed from rare jewels. She was smiling brightly, and until she spoke, Freckles had not realized fully that it was his loved Bird Woman. Noticing his bewilderment, she cried, "Why, Freckles, don't you know me in my war clothes?"
"I do in the uniform in which you fight the Limberlost," said Freckles.
The Bird Woman laughed. Then he told her why he had come, but she scarcely could believe him. She could not say exactly when she would go, but she would make it as soon as possible, for she was most anxious for the study. While they talked, the angel was busy packing a box of sandwiches, cake, fruit, and flowers. She gave him a last frosty glass,
thanked him repeatedly for bringing news of new material. Then Freckles went into the night. He rode toward the Limberlost with his eyes on the stars. Presently he removed his hat, hung it to his belt, and ruffled his hair to the sweep of the night wind. He filled the air all the way with snatches of oratorios, gospel hymns, and dialect, and coon songs, in a startlingly varied program. The one thing Freckles knew that he could do was to sing. The Duncans heard him coming a mile up the corduroy and could not believe their senses. Freckles unfastened the box from his belt and gave Mrs. Duncan and the children all the edibles it contained, except for one big piece of cake that he carried to the sweet-loving Duncan. He put the flowers back in the box and set it among his books. He did not say anything, but they understood it was not to be touched. "That's Freckles's flowers," said a tiny Scotsman. "But," he added cheerfully, "it's our sweeties." Freckles's face slowly flushed as he took Duncan's cake and started toward the swamp. While Duncan ate, Freckles told him something about the evening, as well as he could find words to express himself, and the big man was so amazed he kept forgetting the treat in his hands. Then Freckles mounted his wheel and began a spin that terminated only when the biggest Plymouth Rock in Duncan's coop saluted a new day, and long lines of light reddened the east. As he rode, he sang. While he sang, he worshipped. But the god he tried to glorify was a dim and faraway mystery. The angel was warm flesh and blood. Every time he passed the little bark-covered imprint on the trail, he dismounted, removed his hat, solemnly knelt, and laid his lips on the impression. Because he kept no account himself, only the laughing-faced old man of the moon knew how often it happened. And as from the beginning to the follies of earth, that gentleman has ever been kind. With the near approach of dawn, Freckles turned his last note. Wearied almost to falling, he turned from the trail into the path leading to the cabin for a few hours' rest. End of chapter 11. Chapter 12 of Freckles. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Freckles by Jean Stratton Porter. Chapter 12. Wherein Black Jack captures Freckles and the angel captures Jack. As Freckles left the trail from the swale close to the south entrance, four large, muscular men arose and swiftly and carefully entered the swamp by the wagon road. Two of them carried a big saw, the third coils of rope and wire, and all of them were heavily armed. They left one man on guard at the entrance. The other three made their way through the darkness as best they could, and were soon at Freckles' room. He had left the swamp on his wheel from the west trail. They counted on his returning on the wheel and circling the east line before he came there. A little below the west entrance to Freckles' room, Black Jack stepped into the swale and, binding a wire tightly around a scrub oak, carried it below the waving grasses, stretched it taut across the trail, and fastened it to a tree in the swamp. Then he obliterated all signs of his work and arranged the grass over the wire until it was so completely covered that only minute examination would reveal it. They entered Freckles' room with hoarse oaths and jests. In a few moments, his specimen case, with its precious contents, was rolled into the swamp, while the saw was eating into one of the finest trees of the Limberlost. The first report from the man on watch was that Duncan had driven to the south camp, the second that Freckles was coming. The man watching was sent to see on which side the boy turned into the path. As they had expected, he took the east. He was a little tired, and his head was rather stupid, for he had not been able to sleep as he had hoped, but he was very happy. Although he watched until his eyes ached, he could see no sign of anyone having entered the swamp. He called a cheery greeting to all his chickens. At Sleepy Snake Creek, he almost fell from his wheel with surprise. The sawbird was surrounded by four lanky youngsters, clamoring for breakfast. The father was strutting with all the importance of a drum major. "No use to expect the bird woman today," said Freckles, "but now wouldn't she be jumping for a chance at that?" As soon as Freckles was far down the east line, the watch was posted below the room on the west to report his coming. It was only a few moments before the signal came. Then the saw stopped, and the rope was wrought out and uncoiled close to a sapling. Wessner and Black Jack crowded to the very edge of the swamp, a little above the wire, and crouched, waiting. They heard Freckles before they saw him. He came gliding down the line swiftly, and as he rode he was singing softly, "Oh, do you love? Oh, say you love." He got no farther. The sharply driven wheel struck the tense wire and bounded back. Freckles shot over the handlebar and coasted down the trail on his chest. As he struck, Black Jack and Wessner were upon him. Wessner caught off an old felt hat and clapped it over Freckles' mouth, while Black Jack twisted the boy's arms behind him and they rushed him into his room. Almost before he realized that anything had happened, he was trussed to a tree and securely gagged. Then three of the men resumed working on the tree. The other followed the path Freckles had worn to Little Chicken's tree, and presently he reported that the wires were down and two teams with the loading apparatus coming to take out the timber. All the time the saw was slowly eating into the big tree. Wessner went to the trail and removed the wire. He picked up Freckles' wheel, that did not seem to be injured, and leaned it against the bushes so that if anyone did pass on the trail, he would not see it doubled in the swamp grass. Then he came and stood in front of Freckles and laughed in devilish hate. To his own amazement, Freckles found himself looking fear in the face and marveled that he was not afraid. 4-1. The tree halfway eaten through, the wagons coming up the road, he bound and gagged. The men with Black Jack and Wessner had belonged to the McLean's gang when last he had heard of them, but who those coming with the wagons might be, he could not guess. If they secured that tree, McLean lost his wager and lost his faith in him. The words of the angel hammered in his ears, "Oh, Freckle, do watch closely." The saw worked steadily. When the tree was down and loaded, what would they do? Pull out and leave him there to report them? It was not to be hoped for. The place always had been lawless. It could mean but one thing. A mist swept before his eyes while his head swam. Was it only last night that he had worshipped the angel in a delirium of happiness? And now what? Wessner, released from a turn at the saw, walked to the flower bed and, tearing up a handful of rare ferns by the roots, started toward Freckles. His intention was obvious. Black Jack stopped him with an oath. "You see here, Dutchy," he bawled. "Maybe you think you'll wash his face with that, but you won't. A contract's a contract. We agreed to take these trees and leave him for you to dispose of whatever way you please, provided you shut him up eternally on this deal. But I'll not see a tied man tormented by a fellow that he can lick up the ground with loose, and that's flat. It raises my gorge to think what he'll get when we're gone. But you didn't think you're free to begin before. Don't you lay a hand on him while I'm here. What do you say, boys?" "I say yes," growled one of McLean's latest deserters. "What's more, we're a pack of fools to risk the dirty work of silencing him. You had him face down, and you on his back. Why the hell didn't you cover his head and roll him into the bushes until we were gone? When I went into this, I didn't understand that he was to see all of us, and that there was murder on the ticket. I'm not up to that. I don't mind lifting trees we came for, but I'm cursed if I want blood on my hands." "Well, you ain't gonna get it," bellowed Jack. "You fellows only contracted to help me get out my marked trees. He belongs to Wessner, and it ain't our deal what happens to him." "Yes, and if Wessner finishes him safely, we are practically in for murder as well as stealing the trees, and if he don't, all hell's to pay. I think you've made a damnable bungle of this thing. That's what I think." "And keep your thoughts to yourself," cried Jack. "We're doing this, and it's all planned safe and sure. As for killing that buck, come to think of it, killing is what he needs. He's a way too good for this world of woe, anyhow. I tell you, it's all safe enough. His dropping out won't be the only secret the old Limberlost has never told. It's too dead easy to make it look like he helped take the timber and then cut. Why, he's played right into our hands. He was here at the swamp all last night and back again in an hour or so. When we get our plan worked out, even old fool Duncan won't lift a finger to look for his carcass. We couldn't have him going in better shape." "You just bet," said Wessner. "I owe him all he'll get, and I'll be damned to you, but I'll pay," he snarled at Freckles.
So it was killing, then. They were not only after this one tree, but many, and with his body it was their plan to kill his honor, to brand him a thief, with them, before the angel, the bird woman, the dear boss, and the Duncans. Freckles, in sick despair, sagged against the ropes. Then he gathered his forces and thought swiftly. There was no hope of McLean's coming. They had chosen a day when they knew he had a contract at the South Camp. The boss would not come before tomorrow, by any possibility, and there would be no tomorrow for the boy. Duncan was on his way to the South Camp, and the bird woman had said she would come as soon as she could. After the fatigue of the party, it was useless to expect her and the angel today, and God save them from coming. The angel's father had said they would be as safe in the Limberlost as at home. What would he think of this? The sweat broke on Freckles' forehead. He tugged at the ropes whenever he felt that he dared, but they were passed around the tree and his body several times and knotted on his chest. He was helpless. There was no hope, no help. And after they had conspired to make him appear a runaway thief to his loved ones, what was it that Wessner would do to him? Whatever it was, Freckles lifted his head and resolved that he would bear in mind what he had once heard the bird woman say. He would go out bonnily. Never would he let them see if he grew afraid. After all, what did it matter what they did to his body if by some scheme of the devil they could encompass his disgrace? Then hope suddenly rose in Freckles' breast. They could not do that. The angel would not believe. Neither would McLean. He would keep up his courage. Kill them they could. Dishonor him they could not. Yet summon all the fortitude he might. That saw, eating into the tree, rasped his nerves worse and worse. With whirling brain he gazed into the Limberlost, searching for something he knew not what, and in blank horror found his eyes focusing on the angel. She was quite a distance away, but he could see her white lips and angry expression. Last week he had taken her and the bird woman across the swamp over the path he followed in going from his room to the chicken tree. He had told them the night before that the butterfly tree was in the line close to this path. In figuring not their coming that day, he failed to reckon with the enthusiasm of the bird woman. They must be there for the study, and the angel had risked crossing the swamp in search of him. Or was there something in his room they needed? The blood surged in his ear as the roar of the Limberlost in the wrath of a storm. He looked again, and it had been a dream. She was not there. Had she been? For his life, Freckles could not tell whether he had really seen the angel or whether his strained senses had played him the most cruel trick of all. Or was it not the kindest? Now he could go on with the vision of her lovely face fresh with him. "Thank you for that, O God," whispered Freckles. "'Twas more than kind of you, and I don't suppose I ought to be wanting anything else. But if you can, oh, I wish I could know before this ends, if 'twas me mother." Freckles could not even whisper the words, for he hesitated a second and ended, "If 'twas me mother did it." "Freckles! Freckles! Oh, Freckles!" The voice of the angel came calling. Freckles swayed forward and wrenched at the rope until it cut deeply into his body. "Hell!" cried Black Jack. "Who is that? Do you know?" Freckles nodded. Jack whipped out a revolver and snatched the gag from Freckles' mouth. "Say quick, or it's up with you right now, and whoever that is with you." "It's the girl the bird woman takes with her," whispered Freckles through dry, swollen lips. "They ain't due here for 5 days yet," said Wessner. "We got onto that last week." "Yes," said Freckles, "but I found a tree covered with butterflies and things along the east line yesterday that I thought the bird woman would want extra. And I went to town to tell her last night. She said she'd come soon, but she didn't say when. They must be here. I take care of the girl while the bird woman works, and tie me quick until she is gone. I'll try to send her back, and then you can go on with your dirty work." "He ain't lying," volunteered Wessner. "I saw that tree covered with butterflies, and him watching around it, when we were spying on him yesterday." "Nah, he leaves lying to your sort," snapped Black Jack, as he undid the rope and pitched it across the room.
"Remember that you're covered every move you make, my buck," he cautioned. "Freckles! Freckles!" came the angel's impatient voice, closer and closer. "I must be answering," said Freckles, and Jack nodded. "Right here," he called, and to the men, "You go on with your work and remember one thing yourselves. The work of the Bird Woman is known all over the world. This girl's father is a rich man, and she is all he has. If you offer hurt of any kind to either of them, this world has no place far enough away or dark enough for you to be hiding in. Hell will be easy to what any man will get if he touches either of them."
"Freckles, where are you?" demanded the angel.
Soul sick with fear for her, Freckles went toward her and parted the bushes that she might enter. She came through without apparently giving him a glance, and the first words she said were, "Why have the gang come so soon? I didn't know you expected them for 3 weeks yet. Or is this some special tree that Mr. McLean needs to fill an order right now?" Freckles hesitated. Would a man dare lie to save himself? No. But to save the angel? Surely that was different. He opened his lips, but the angel was capable of saving herself. She walked among them, exactly as if she had been reared in a lumber camp and never waited for an answer.
"Why, your specimen case!" she cried. "Look, haven't you noticed that it's tipped over? Set it straight, quickly!"
A couple of the men stepped out and carefully righted the case.
"There, that's better," she said.
"Freckles, I'm surprised at you being so careless. It would be a shame to break those lovely butterflies for one old tree. Is that a valuable tree? Why didn't you tell us last night that you were going to take out a tree this morning? Oh, say, did you put your case there to protect that tree from that stealing old blackjack and his gang? I bet you did. Well, if that wasn't right, what kind of a tree is it?"
"It's a white oak," said Freckles.
"Like those they make dining room tables and sideboards from?"
"Yes."
"My, how interesting," she cried. "I don't know a thing about timber, but my father wants me to learn just everything I can. I'm going to ask him to let me come here and watch you until I know enough to boss a gang myself." "Do you like to cut trees, gentlemen?" she said with angelic sweetness of the men. Some of them appeared foolish and some grim, but one managed to say they did. Then the angel's eyes turned full on Blackjack, and she gave the most natural little start of astonishment.
"Oh, I almost thought that you were a ghost," she cried.
"But I see now that you are really and truly. Were you ever in Colorado?"
"No," said Jack.
"I see you aren't the same man," said the angel. "You know, we were in Colorado last year, and there was a cowboy who was the handsomest man anywhere around. He'd come riding into town every night, and all we girls just adored him. Oh, but he was a beauty. I thought at first glance you were really he, but I see now he wasn't nearly so tall nor so broad as you, and only half as handsome." The men began to laugh, while Jack flushed crimson. The angel joined in the laugh.
"Well, I'll leave it to you. Isn't he handsome?" she challenged. "As for that cowboy's face, it couldn't be compared to yours. The only trouble with you is that your clothes are spoiling you. It's the dress those cowboys wear that make half the attraction. If you were properly clothed, you could break the heart of the prettiest girl in the country."
With one accord, the other men looked at Black Jack, and for the first time realized that he was a superb specimen of manhood, for he stood 6 feet tall, was broad, well-rounded, and had dark, even skin, big black eyes, and full red lips.
"I'll tell you what," exclaimed the angel, "I just love to see you on horseback. Nothing sets a handsome man off so splendidly. Do you ride?"
"Yes," said Jack, and his eyes were burning on the angel, as if he could fathom the depths of her soul.
"Well," said the angel winsomely, "I know what I just wish you'd do. I wish you would let your hair grow a little longer, then wear a blue flannel shirt a little open at the throat, a red tie, and a broad-brimmed felt hat, and ride past my house of evenings. I'm always at home then, and almost always on the veranda, and, oh, but I would like to see you. Will you do that for me?"
It is impossible to describe the art with which the angel asked the question. She was looking straight into Jack's face, coarse and hardened with sin and careless living, which was now taking on a wholly different expression. The evil lines of it were softening and fading under her clear gaze. A dull red flamed into his bronze cheeks while his eyes were growing brightly tender. "Yes," he said, and the glance he gave the men was of such a nature that no one saw fit even to change countenance. "Oh, goody!" she cried, tilting on her toes. "I'll ask all the girls to come see, but they needn't stick it. We can get along without them, can't we?" Jack leaned toward her. He was the charmed, fluttering bird, while the angel was the snake. "Well, I rather guess," he cried. The angel drew a deep breath and surveyed him rapturously. "My, but you're tall," she commented. "Do you suppose I will ever grow to reach your shoulders?" She stood on tiptoe and measured the distance with her eyes. Then she developed timid confusion while her glance sought the ground. "I wish I could do something," she half whispered. Jack seemed to increase an inch in height. "What?" he asked hoarsely. "Lariat Bill always used to have a bunch of red flowers in his shirt pocket. The red lit up his dark eyes and olive cheeks and made him splendid. May I put some red flowers on you?" Freckles stared as he wheezed for breath. He wished the earth would open and swallow him. Was he dead or alive? Since his angel had seen Black Jack, she had never glanced his way. Was she completely bewitched? Would she throw herself at the man's feet before them all? Couldn't she give him even one thought? Hadn't she seen that he was gagged and bound? Did she truly think that these were McLean's men? Why, she could not. It was only a few days ago that she had been close enough to this man, and angry enough with him, to peel the hat from his head with a shot. Suddenly a thing she had said jestingly to him one day came back with startling force. You must take angels on trust. Of course you must. She was his angel. She must have seen. His life, and what was far more, her own, was in her hands. There was nothing he could do but trust her. Surely she was working out some plan. The angel knelt beside his flower bed and recklessly tore up by the roots a big bunch of foxfire. "These stems are so tough and sticky," she said. "I can't break them." "Loan me your knife," she ordered Freckles. As she reached for the knife, her back was for one second toward the men. She looked into his eyes and deliberately winked. She severed the stems, tossed the knife to Freckles, and walking to Jack, laid the flowers over his heart. Freckles broke into a sweat of agony. He had said she would be safe in a herd of howling savages. Would she? If Black Jack even made a motion toward touching her, Freckles knew that from somewhere he would muster the strength to kill him. He mentally measured the distance to where his club lay, and set his muscles for a spring. But no, by the splendor of God. The big fellow was baring his head with a hand that was unsteady. The angel pulled one of the long silver pins from her hat and fastened her flowers securely. Freckles was quaking. What was to come next? What was she planning? And oh, did she understand the danger of her presence among these men, the real necessity for action? As the angel stepped from Jack, she turned her head to one side and peered at him, quite as Freckles had seen the little yellow fellow do on the line 100 times, and said, "Well, that does the trick. Isn't that fine? See how it sets him off, boys? Don't you forget the tie is to be red. And the first ride's soon. I can't wait very long. Now I must go. The Bird Woman will be ready to start, and she will come here hunting for me next, for she is busy today. What did I come here for, anyway?" She glanced inquiringly around, and several of the men laughed. Oh, the delight of it! She had forgotten her errand for him. Jack had a second increase in height. The angel glanced helplessly as if seeking a clue. Then her eyes fell, as if by accident, on Freckles, and she cried, "Oh, I know! It was those magazines the Bird Woman promised you. I came to tell you that we put them under the box where we hide things at the entrance of the swamp as we came in. I knew I would need my hands crossing the swamp, so I hid them there. You'll find them at the same old place." Then Freckles spoke. "It's mighty risky for you to be crossing the swamp alone," he said. "I'm surprised that the Bird Woman would be letting you try it. I know it's a little further, but it's begging you, I am, to be going back by the trail. That's bad enough, but it's far safer than the swamp." The angel laughed merrily. "Oh, stop your nonsense," she cried. "I'm not afraid, not in the least. The Bird Woman didn't want me to try following a path that I'd been over only once, but I was sure I could do it, and I'm rather proud of my performance. Now don't go babying. You know I'm not afraid."
"No," said Freckles gently, "I know you're not, but that has nothing to do with the fact that your friends are afraid for you. On the trail you can see your way a bit ahead, and you've all the world a better chance if you meet a snake."
Then Freckles had an inspiration. He turned to Jack imploringly. "You tell her," he pleaded. "Tell her to go by the trail. She will for you." The implication of this statement was so gratifying to Black Jack that he seemed again to expand and take on an increase before their very eyes.
"You bet," exclaimed Jack, and to the angel, "You better take Freckles' word for it, miss. He knows the old swamp better than any of us except me, and if he says, 'Go by the trail,' you'd best do it."
The angel hesitated. She wanted to recross the swamp and try to reach the horse. She knew Freckles would brave any danger to save her crossing the swamp alone, but she really was not afraid, while the trail added over a mile to the walk. She knew the path. She intended to run for dear life the instant she felt herself from their sight. And, tucked in the folds of her blouse, was a fine little .32-caliber revolver that her father had presented her for her share in what he was pleased to call her military exploit. One last glance at Freckles showed her the agony in his eyes, and immediately she imagined he had some other reason. She would follow the trail. "All right," she said, giving Jack a thrilling glance. "If you say so, I'll return by the trail to please you. Goodbye, everybody." She lifted the bushes and started toward the entrance.
"You damn fool! Stop her!" growled Wessner. "Keep her till we've loaded, anyhow. You're playing hell. Can't you see that when this thing is found out, there she'll be to ruin all of us? If you let her go, every man of us has got to cut, and some of us will be caught, sure."
Jack sprang forward, Freckles' heart muffled in his throat. The angel seemed to divine Jack's coming. She was humming a little song. She deliberately stopped and began pulling the heads of the curious grasses that grew all around her. When she straightened, she took a step backward and called, "Ho, Freckles, the Bird Woman wants that natural history pamphlet returned. It belongs to a set she is going to have bound. That's one of the reasons we put it under the box. You be sure to get them as you go home tonight, for fear it rains or becomes damp with the heavy dews."
"All right," said Freckles, but it was in a voice he had never heard before.
Then the angel turned and sent a parting glance at Jack. She was overwhelmingly human and bewitchingly lovely.
"You won't forget that ride and the red tie," she half asserted, half questioned.
Jack succumbed. Freckles was his captive, but he was the angel's soul and body. His face wore the holiest look it had ever known as he softly re-echoed Freckles' "All right." With her head held well up, the angel walked slowly away, and Jack turned to the men.
"Drop your damn staring and saw wood," he shouted. "Don't you know a thing at all about how to treat a lady? It might have been a question which of the cronies that crouched over green wood fires in the cabins of Wildcat Hollow, eternally sucking a corncob pipe and stirring the endless kettles of stewing coon and possum, had taught him to do even as well as he had by the angel." The men muttered and threatened among themselves, but they began working desperately. Someone suggested that a man be sent to follow the angel and to watch her and the Bird Woman leave the swamp. Freckles' heart sank within him, but Jack was in a delirium and past all caution. "Yes," he sneered, "maybe all of you had better give over on the saw and run after the girl. I guess not. Seems to me I got the favors. I don't see no bouquets on the rest of you. If anybody follows her, I do. And I'm needed here among such a pack of idiots. There's no danger in that baby face. She wouldn't give me away. You double and work like 40, while me and Wessner will take the axes and begin to cut in on the other side."
"What about the noise?" asked Wessner.
"No difference about the noise," answered Jack. "She took us to be from McLean's gang, slick as grease. Make the chips fly." So all of them attacked the big tree. Freckles sat on one of his benches and waited.
in their haste to fell the tree and load it, so that the teamsters could start, and leave them free to attack another, they had forgotten to rebind him. The angel was on the trail and safely started. The cold perspiration made Freckles' temples clammy and ran in little streams down his chest. It would take her more time to follow the trail, but her safety was Freckles' sole thought in urging her to go that way. He tried to figure on how long it would require to walk to the carriage. He wondered if the Bird Woman had unhitched. He followed the angel every step of the way. He figured on when she would cross the path of the clearing, pass the deep pool where his find-out frog lived, cross Sleepy Snake Creek, and reach the carriage. He wondered what she would say to the Bird Woman and how long it would take them to pack and start. He knew now that they would understand, and the angel would try to get the boss there in time to save his wager. She could never do it, for the saw was over half through, and Jack and Wesner cutting into the opposite side of the tree. It appeared as if they could fell at least that tree before McLean could come, and if they did, he lost his wager. When it was down, would they rebind him and leave him for Wesner to wreak his insane vengeance on? Or would they take him along to the next tree and dispose of him when they had stolen all the timber they could? Jack had said that he should not be touched until he left. Surely he would not run all that risk for one tree, when he had many others of far greater value marked. Freckles felt that he had some hope to cling to now, but he found himself praying that the angel would hurry. Once Jack came to Freckles and asked if he had any water. Freckles arose and showed him where he kept his drinking water. Jack drank in great gulps, and as he passed back the bucket, he said, "When a man's got a chance of catching a fine girl like that, he ought not be mixed up in any dirty business. I wish to God I was out of this." Freckles answered heartily, "I wish I was, too." Jack stared at him a minute and then broke into a roar of rough laughter. "Blessed if I blame you," he said. "But you had your chance. We offered you a fair thing. And you gave Wesner his answer. I ain't envying you when he gives you his." "You're 6-1, answered Freckles. "It will be easy enough for you to be killing the body of me, but curse you all, you can't blacken me soul." "Well, I'd give anything you could name if I had your honesty," said Jack. When the mighty tree fell, the Limberlost shivered and screamed with the echo. Freckles groaned in despair, but the gang took heart. There was so much accomplished. They knew where to dispose of it safely, with no questions asked. Before the day was over, they could remove 3 others, all suitable for veneer, and worth far more than this. Then they would leave Freckles to Wesner and scatter for safety, with more money than they had ever hoped for in their possession. End of chapter 12.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.